And good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards, thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwunga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name's Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm flying solo because Mona has a cold, and she didn't want to come and cough all over everybody, so I'm doing the solo thing. And welcome John and Audrey. They're going to be discussing the plight of the Uyghur people. John is an international student, and he's living in Canada. And he's been able to make himself available to this show so that we can talk about the plight of the Uyghur people. First of all, welcome, folks. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And the first thing I'd like to talk about is where the Uyghurs live. You know, I think if you ask the average person in the street in Regina about Uyghurs, they probably wouldn't know who they are or where they live. So let's answer the last question first here. Where do Uyghurs live?
Very good people live in west of China. It's connected with 8 countries in Middle Asia and north of India. North east of India and north of Tibet, and there are almost about like 10 million Uyghur people live there, and the name is Xinjiang, autonomous region.
How long have the Uyghurs been there?
Forever?
Thousands of years.
Thousands of years, maybe. Thousand years. And there's also found a mummy from, it's last about like 3,000 years, and the gene, they did the test the DNA. DNA is similar with the European and the Middle Asian people.
Were they there, for example, let me go back to some grade school history when they talked about Marco Polo and the Silk Road. Did Marco Polo go through that territory?
Through Kashgar and
In Marco Polo, the writer a book about my homeland and mentioned the Kashgar, Turpan, in his book.
So this is the old Silk Road, part of the old Silk Road.
That's true.
Back in the days before they were really sailing. You know, this is a long time ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, Genghis Khan came through when he was conquering, and he actually adopted the same writing style from the Uyghur people.
Genghis Khan did not do genocide or occupy to my homeland. They just accepted our culture and writing.
He was just visiting.
The Uyghurs fared well with Genghis Khan.
And he's from, Genghis Khan is from Mongolia, right?
Yeah.
Which is a little bit to the east right? Have I got that right?
In north of China. East of my homeland.
Right. So that's the kind of the territory that we're in there now. So that's where, I guess, what will we call that area then? Xinjiang province
Xinjiang province.
I think it's officially Xinjiang
autonomous region.
Uyghur autonomous region.
Exactly.
And so what's basically happening there now that's causing problems, let's say.
Uh, if the for the audience, if they think about the Tibetan, it will be easier for them to understand what is the problem mm-hmm. between the Chinese government and the Uyghur people there. The problem is the Uyghurs want their right to keep their culture, literature, or religion,
mm-hmm.
just like Tibetan want. And but the Chinese government is trying to assimilate them. No freedom of religion and right of speaking, using their mm-hmm. language. That's the problem of.
Yeah. Well, I guess. In it was in 1949 that Mao took over the government of China, and at that time, I believe they probably reasserted their intent to control that region. Prior to that time, I think just because of how far the region would be from sort of central China, it probably was. More independent just by virtue of the fact of how far away they were.
It's not part of China. It is now, I should say, but it wasn't part of China. It's a Turkic group. So there's lots of Turkic groups within a lot of the Stan countries. So in Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, all the way stretching through to Turkey, there's groups of Turkic people, and a lot of those countries, though some of them were part of the USSR, are now independent countries and had previously been independent countries. The same thing is true for East Turkestan, but it was invaded in 1949 and put under communist rule.
So that was the name previously?
Yes, it was previously called East Turkestan. Then when it was taken under Chinese communist control, it was named a province of Xinjiang.
Xinjiang,
yeah.
Just like actually the Tibetans, the name is also not Tibet in China. Right. They changed the name from Tibet to Xizang, but in Western countries, the people mostly follow the British English word Tibet. So right. Actually in Chinese, you don't call it Tibet, it's called Xizang. There's another name, which means the west border of China.
Yeah, and once again, a similar sort of situation where it's supposedly an autonomous region. But the central government is exercising control. And I think I was just going to suggest that this is probably more for economic reasons than for anything else. What sort of natural resources exist in the region there that interests the Chinese government?
In according to the latest statistic, is 40% of the gas that China is using is from my homeland. So my homeland is rich with the oil, gas, coal, and natural resources. All those resources are exporting to the east and the south of China, where developed industrially. So, and Uyghur people are complaining they are not benefiting from this. So also Chinese people are benefiting, or Chinese government is developing their economy without giving benefit to Uyghur, the local people. What's up?
So you've got the resources in there, and they're exploiting the resources.
Yeah.
I think there are factories in there as well.
Yeah.
Shouldn't there be lots of jobs for Uyghurs?
Yeah, but if you visit those companies, and at least 95% are Chinese people, not the local. The minority will not work, especially the Uyghur people. If you visit any kind that kind of company, you couldn't see the Uyghur people. Even their words, they are the only Chinese word, and Chinese people are working there. So they are totally not benefiting this thing. And that's true. They are not benefiting from their resources.
Right. So we're talking about, I guess there's two different, really distinct cultures. You said they're really not part of China.
They are now, but they weren't originally. There's the Han Chinese, which is the when you think of a Chinese person, that's who you're thinking of. That's the ethnic majority. And there, that's kind of the ruling majority. And then there's the Uyghur people who originally were the people who inhabited that area. Now, when China took over that area, one of their policies was, has become, to have Han Chinese come into the area. So they encourage emigration out of the further into China and immigrate into Xinjiang, and then they export Uyghurs out of Xinjiang, and they'll tell young, especially a lot of young women will get moved out because there's not work. They won't hire Uyghurs in their own area, the main, unless you're a farmer, which is generally a fairly poor occupation to have, but you won't get hired in the factories. They're hiring the Han Chinese. They're moving them in to work in those areas, and they're also moving out the people, encouraging them to go to the coast and work out there in the bigger cities. But what has been documented to have been happening is a lot of the young women are getting moved into sex trade. Of course, they don't have a clue that's what's happening, but once they get out there, they're completely by themselves, and they're forced to work in that. So.
And this way, the China is there's 1.3 billion people, and the Uyghur, as I said, just like 10 million. We separate those Uyghur to the east or south, and they couldn't be together, and very easily to lose their culture, and very easy to be assimilated. That's what the Chinese government want to do. Actually, this idea is has already been used in Africa or in Soviet Union. The Stalin already used this for Ukrainian people or Mennonite. There's different groups.
Mm-hmm. I guess when you think about it, one of China's big problems that they've been struggling with for many, many years is their overpopulation. You know, they've had a one-child policy in China for many years to try and deal with the problem. And, of course, the other thing, the thing that they're doing here to try to deal with their overpopulation is moving people into less populated areas like Xinjiang province. Like, you're only 10 million people there.
It serves a few purposes, like, because one, like John is saying, is to dilute the population. So they don't want dissent. That's
right.
A big thing there. So if you cannot make everyone kind of the same, then there's going to be less dissent. So we're going to try and just kind of wipe out a culture and make everyone the same. It's a lot easier to deal with people that way.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing is that I believe that there's laws, or the Chinese constitution itself actually protects minorities. Officially, minorities are protected in China, and discrimination is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It makes one wonder where the disconnect is. I suspect that you've got people on one side of a fence who are aware of the legalities, and they want the Chinese government to behave according to what their actual laws are.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the other side of the government. We were briefly talking here before we started the show, and I was talking about it's possible in fact common to have people who are capitalists who aren't great believers in democracy, and I think this is what's happening in China. They're embracing capitalism, but they're still not in favor at all, of course, of democracy. So when it comes to material, improvements for themselves, for their particular people, they're all for it. And fairness it's difficult to get fairness if you don't have democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, perhaps is what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, you can frame things differently. You can say, we're not just not hiring Uyghur people. We want to hire people whose first language was Mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the Uyghur people, that's not their first language. Even if they have a university degree in Mandarin, they did all of their schooling, because you can't do schooling in Uyghur anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible. Even grade school, that doesn't happen.
Right.
It's not allowed. So Your schooling is in Mandarin, but you can say, oh, your first language isn't, so we want to hire somebody whose first language is Mandarin. Well, maybe that's just a job requirement now.
So you could have your Mandarin language, but you're not ethnic.
You could walk in and fool them, or you could do a telephone interview, completely fool them. Your Mandarin is so good. Of course it is. You did all of your schooling. You have a university degree in that, and all in that language.
Right.
But once they ask that question, then all of a sudden maybe you don't meet a requirement. Well, now is that discrimination? That's just a job requirement.
Yeah, that's getting to be definitely unfair.
Yeah,
for sure. Now, the little bit of reading that I've been able to do here suggested that things were not horrible, let's say, in, say, from 1955 or so up until the 90s. The Chinese were definitely asserting their authority there, but they did have laws on the books, like we were just saying, that there were against discrimination, that sort of thing. But I have a feeling that, and maybe you'd agree with me here, that the problem is the dollar. You know, they're starting to see all these resources, and they're exploiting the resources, and then add to that, you've got the Han Chinese that they're moving in because they've got no room for them in mainland China, and here's all this space in Xinjiang province. So the Uyghurs get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
I think you'd have a hard time saying that anyone who lived through the Cultural Revolution had a good time, and it affected the Uyghurs as well. Especially if you were a successful person who had previously materially done well, you did not do well through the Cultural Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true everywhere, I believe, in China, and certainly true for the Uyghurs. But that whole idea of there being mass immigration into Xinjiang, that's gotten worse in the last decade or two.
Yeah.
True?
Yeah, that's at times it's immigrated a lot.
Yeah, the other thing I was wondering about here is how they deal with the question of religion. You know, my sense is that with any religion, as long as people don't put the religion ahead of the party, or make too much of it, then that's fine. But if it becomes something that seems to be too important to them, well, then they sort of step in and calm things down. Well, for example, what would happen if somebody wanted to go to Mecca?
Mecca, no, because after the World War II, especially if you want to go other countries, so you need a passport. Before the World War II, the passport is not that difficult. Because of the passport, the Chinese government can totally control how many people can go to Mecca every year, because you need to apply to passport. Then Uyghur people couldn't apply as you want. You need to pay a lot, and then someone must guarantee for them if this guy do something bad, so-called bad, and then I guarantee I will take responsibility, something like that. They guarantee that. So the Chinese government every year can control it. Usually it would be like in whole China would be like 20,000. The recent statistic is 20,000 every year they can go. So there are also like Hui, other Muslims too. And this 20,000 is totally not enough. Even my grandpa, he really wanted to go, but no passport, couldn't go.
So do you know people who have been able to go to do the pilgrimage?
It's very common because they don't have passports. So that's the biggest problem. So they couldn't go as they want. They need to apply for it.
But some do manage to go, but just not as many as want to go.
It's difficult to imagine. It was difficult for me to imagine when I first found out. But the idea that you cannot acquire a passport.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you are a legal citizen, but you're not allowed to have documentation showing that. So if you don't have a passport, if they won't issue a passport, some people have. You know people who have gone, who have been able to get the passport and be allowed to get the visa to go to Mecca.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just, of course, for every Muslim, that's one of their things they need to do. But certainly not every Muslim is being allowed to go. But even just daily life things, going to mosque, that's...
Especially if you work for the government or you have a decent job and then you go, as you are arrested, then you will have a problem. You might lose your job. So usually the basic, the lowest classic of that society can go because the government can do nothing. They could not kill for that. They don't have jobs, they don't have enough food or whatever. No money. So the Chinese government couldn't find. So the lowest classic usually can go to the mosque. But middle classic or higher classic, they have money. So when they find a lot, so they couldn't go.
If you want a good job, you have to be a Chinese party member.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Chinese party member, the Communist Party is your God, is your highest thing. So if you're then going to mosque, you're putting something, you're saying there's a God, you're saying you worship God, you're putting that above the Chinese Party. So then you are not a good Chinese Communist Party member.
Right.
You therefore aren't part of the party, therefore you don't have your job. And that's the logic that makes it impossible to be able to outwardly be practicing your religion and have a good job.
Right, so if you do get the good job, then that basically precludes you from going to mosque, and you would know that up front.
It wouldn't have to be stated, and it would never be put on paper, because how would that look internationally?
Sure, yeah. But if you've got the good job, then forget about mosque.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting way of, you know, my words are, but anyway, you're basically discouraging. Religious practice when it comes right down to it.
Yeah.
And of course, I suppose that goes for any practice. There are a few Christians in China, I'm sure, and Falun Gong we hear about, that sort of thing, and they all run into the same problem.
Well, in China there are three legal religions, so Falun Gong is in a worse position because they're not even a legal religion.
Ah.
So they're doing something illegal. It's legal to be Christian, Buddhist, and Muslim.
Ah.
Those are legal. Mm-hmm. Legal doesn't mean that if you are actually carrying a Chinese passport that you're allowed to do that and also go to have a good job. But if I come in with my Canadian passport, I would have no problem going to church.
Right.
But it wouldn't be the same if I carried a Chinese passport and was trying to work.
The past must be the communist, you know. And the past is communist. How would you to be the very decent Christian? Or, you know, the past says, I don't trust God, I trust the communist. And then tell you or talk about the God, would you trust that? It's funny.
It's
would be very funny.
Yeah.
This.
Yeah. So basically, then, if you're a farmer, or if you're a very small businessman, you can afford to be a Christian or a Muslim or a Buddhist.
Yeah.
But if you have a good job, or you're have any kind of status, then you're not going to be professing a religion of any sort.
Yeah, you're going to be closeted.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And the same thing, it's the same thing always. You're going to force people to make a decision, and some people are going to choose to be closeted and just be quiet about that. Some people are going to choose to forget about the religion, and some people are going to actually start to become more extreme because they're so frustrated of being pushed away. And that's the reaction that happens every time this sort of thing happens. So it's a dangerous game to play, I worry.
Right. It makes you wonder how far down the path the Chinese government is willing to go. Ultimately, it makes you wonder what their goal is. I mean, is it they're trying to basically stamp it out altogether, but at the same time not appear to be having that as their goal? Like I say, going back to the legality of the thing, the laws they have on their books look pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
But when it comes to practice, they seem to be falling a little bit short.
And the way to check that is what happens to the people who actually speak out against that. And you see it time and time again, what happens to the people who speak out against the human rights abuses. It's always the same results. So.
Yeah, and it doesn't... there's certainly equal opportunity there. They can be Uyghurs, they can be Chinese, doesn't matter.
Chinese speaking out too, yeah.
Yeah, if you speak out, then you're going to have a problem. And that's one of the reasons why Amnesty is here, I suppose, because to a lesser or greater degree, it happens all around the world. It even happens in Canada, you know, when you think of some people that have come out and said things that the Canadian government wasn't too fond of. Sometimes the whistleblowers, let's call them, find themselves in difficult circumstances, you know. And it just, it's a matter of degree. And you still, you need the people with the courage to come out and tell it like it is, you know, to try and change things. Anyway, we're at the end of our first half hour. And we've got to take a break here now, and I've got some music lined up here to play, and then we'll go on. And I think I want to talk a little bit more about John's story, how he got here to Canada, and what his plans are, and what he hopes to be able to do in the future. So we will be right back. I'm Jim Hutchings. I'm speaking with Audrey and John, and we're talking about the plight of the Uyghurs in China.
Thank you.
Bağlan ustam talla sattı diyeği yok. Yayırımı tüynek ki yetti o diyegi yok. Bağlan ustam talya sattı diyegi yok. Yayırımı tüynek ki yetti o diyegi yok. Diyegi yok tüynek kemeni karab baksam kız balla haliniz çoğun üzünüzün isketi yok. Diyegi yok küyne kemini karab baksam kız balla haliniz çoğun özünüzün isketi yok. Ah kıbillemen mındıyken kıbillemen. Kıbillemen tokmikam kıbillemen. Hem delik dert kıyamın kıbillemen da deyya bulandı bulmandı kıbillemen. Endelik dert kıyamın kıbbıl almen da deyya bulamdı bulmamdı kıbbıl amem. Yıldın mangan şübbeknin unçak sifes. Aldırın anla kız balla canzi ammak tes. Yıldın mangan şüphetmen mını aldı çakifes. Aldırın anla kız balla egi teknek tez. Ek tek samanla tek rahat küresen. Küyek dağanın kınıda künek yiyesen. Ek tek samanla tek rahat küresen. Tügünün mayakıda tükme kadaysen. Ah kıbbıl almen mındıken kıbbıllemen. Kıbbıllemen tokmıkan kıbbıllemen. Kıbbıllemen çökünüm kıbbıllemen. Endelik dert kıyamın kıbbıllemen. Da deyya bulamdı bulmamdı kıbbıllemen. Endelik dert kıyamın kıbbıl almen. Da deyya bulamdı bulmamdı kıbbıllemen. Altı şerli yol münüttü can çıkamayım. Bir padişah şeye sürüptü can çıkamayım. Altı şerli yol münüttü can çıkamayım. Bir padişah şeye sürüptü can çıkamayım. İlim öptü yaş ballamın vicdanının balık dinyemden beştin bir tiyin bul çıkamayım. Elbette yaş balla vicdanının balıkdın minin beştin bir tenge pul çıkamay.
And there we have it. It was interesting as I started this up. John was saying that he recognized the song. This was quite by chance. And the person who recorded it went over there and recorded it, ended up in jail for a while. So what was going on there, John?
Yeah, this guy is really interested in introducing the Uyghur people to Western peoples. And in last year, suddenly he was arrested because he did write a lot of articles and did run our website for introducing this. But Chinese government doesn't want this, doesn't want let the people know what is happening there. It's most close. They want to close that area. It's the most. So these are Western people countries. But, so...
They want control. I guess that's basically it. They don't... what are the words of the song? Pretty innocuous words to the song?
Yeah, it's very basic. It's just a traditional song. There's no political. It's just doing proposal to a woman to marry him. That's all.
Like a folk song kind of thing.
Yeah. Like a love song kind of thing.
A love song. Oh, yeah. There's no politics.
So nothing particularly objectionable about the song itself.
It depends on your point of view. If the fact that they're singing in that language is objectionable to you, then,
okay, there you go.
Then that's going to be objectionable to you no matter what they're saying.
Right. So what they're objecting to is the actual use of the Uyghur language. And
and Uyghur instruments and saying that it's Uyghur and saying,
right.
Yeah. And saying that it's worthwhile.
Right. Oh, it's not a nice situation to be in. Do you feel I'm just wondering, do you feel that China is basically trying to assimilate, kind of make the Uyghur people disappear? Is that ultimately what they want to do, or do they even? They're just trying to make things work in Xinjiang province economically. And I don't know, it makes a person wonder just what the ultimate goal is.
I think your idea of it disappearing would certainly be how it's perceived by the Uyghur people. Anyhow, if you look at Kashgar, which was their capital, when China came in, they made Urumqi their capital because it was not as big of a city. Not as famous of a city. Kashgar was right along the Silk Road, a very well-developed in terms of population and culturally city, with old Kashgar having their homes from 2,000 years ago. China's actually gone in and just destroyed a lot of it. Saying it was an earthquake wouldn't stand up to earthquakes, these buildings that have stood there for 2,000 years, and instead have put up very cookie-cutter apartment blocks that are, everyone says it's ridiculous. This is supposed to be not everyone says, of course, but it's been said by many people that these aren't buildings that can stand up to earthquakes, and you've just destroyed all of this. Well, why would they do that? Of course, maybe they would have a different reason, but it certainly is perceived as they're just trying to erase the cultural thing. And even what John said earlier about there being mummies found from 3,000 years ago that are shown to have the same ethnic background as today's Uyghurs, and not related to Chinese, but related to Central Asia and related to Europe, like along Turkish lines, that's separate from Chinese. The reason that that's even interesting or would be mentioned by him is because the Chinese government does try to say that there is no difference between the Uyghurs. They are actually Chinese Han that just happened to live in what was considered the Uyghur area, but everyone's the exact same. They're not Uyghur, they're Chinese. So it feels like the culture is supposed to disappear.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if part of the problem here is that they've got certain goals, economic goals, whatever, that they want to achieve there, and perhaps the people in charge of achieving those goals, they want to do it sort of the quick and dirty way, instead of having cooperation and understanding, they just want to sort of get the job done, and perhaps that's why things are so rough there. What's your thought on that? I'm sure you have some Chinese friends and acquaintances, and when you speak to them, they're kind of, there's a lack of knowledge on their part, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the average Chinese person is kind of in the dark when it comes to Xinjiang province in the first place.
Yeah, that's true. But as their law in law, but China's government beautify every
right.
policy to
sure.
minorities. They are very good to minorities.
Right.
They just mentioned what they are doing. Like very good,
mm-hmm.
but they never mention their media or whatever. They never mention how they are assimilating, how they are changing their education, how they are forbidding their language, how they are forbidding their religion. They never mention that. They just they only mention their like they did give money like few thousand maybe to the farmers. They mention those things, but they never mention that religious or culturally assimilation. So my friends in the university or in my homeland, they think that the Chinese government is doing well. They are so good, being minorities, mm-hmm. so good, they just think that. But once I try to explain, no, this is wrong. What the Chinese government is doing those, and then I talk about the assimilation, then I would be in bad positions, and I need to worry myself. Then.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mentioned that, so there's no freedom of speech, so I would be a problem, but I couldn't talk. At that time, the feeling is terrible. You cannot imagine. You know this is wrong, but you totally can explain this, but you couldn't talk this. So
right.
You will know how bad that life is at that time.
I witnessed John even lie to Chinese friends and say mm-hmm. he happens to know Mandarin, but he's not actually from China. He's from somewhere else. So then he doesn't have to explain
right.
why he knows Turkish.
Right.
Why would he know the Turkish language? And then finally, when it comes up, finally feels comfortable, okay, this person won't be angry at me.
Right.
And says it. And this person who's lived in China their whole life.
Yeah.
Has absolutely no idea of the existence of
sure.
Uyghurs and has
right.
no idea what he's talking about and is quite, not just completely baffled why about the whole situation. It's just,
yeah.
what are you talking about?
Wouldn't there be a certain level of disbelief on their part?
Absolutely.
That, like John is telling them some kind of wild story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it looked. Yeah.
So this is why they're managing the information sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you're actually hesitant to talk to anybody
yeah.
about this. I mean, especially a Chinese person.
Yeah.
It's hard to go. It's not even for North Americans. Most people don't have a very firm understanding. Again, like John said, if you say it's similar to the Tibet story, then
mm-hmm.
it's a little bit more understood because
right.
Tibet is a bit more understood. But for most people, there's just not an understanding. So then you have to tell a very long story. And
mm-hmm.
if you ask me about where I'm from, I don't have to tell a very long story.
Right.
If you ask him where he's from, he has to tell a very long story. So
right.
if you don't want to tell a very long story, you just kind of give us some
sure.
sort of simplified answer.
Yeah. And of course, if you're talking to a person from China, then you don't know what connections are there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could be talking to somebody that's going to repeat that back to somebody that you don't want it to hear.
Yeah. And if you're worried about your family back home, then you really have to be aware of that. And even recently, it's come out that there are believed to be people in just local community organizations who are actually reporting things back to.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So.
I don't know. I think since 9/11, there's been a lot of that. some of the groups that I meet with, we laugh and we look around the room and we wonder, well, is there anybody from CSIS here? You know? Want to hold your hand up there?
They aren't going to hold their hand up.
But, it makes you wonder, just because you're involved in a little bit of social activism, and that's in our own country.
Yeah.
So that's what our fears are in Canada. And what's it like, in a place like Xinjiang province or just in China?
Yeah. And it's funny you mention 9/11 because the communist government in China has really used that to their advantage, the fact that the Uyghur people are Muslim people though known, thought to be a very moderate Muslim people, but that doesn't really ever matter, right? So you can say the whole world is existing in this idea of if you're Muslim, you're a terrorist, then you can use that and allow the Western country to support you and say, oh, these are just Chinese Muslim terrorists.
Yeah, I've noticed a story this morning, actually, when I was researching things. There was a fellow by the name of, you may know him or know of him, Ayub Muhammad, and along with some other Uyghurs who were decided to leave and start a new life in the West, and they ended up traveling into Afghanistan on the eve of the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. And ultimately, they ended up getting detained, and they spent years in Guantanamo.
Yeah, 9 years.
Yeah,
almost 9 years now, close.
So this is the sort of thing that can happen, and ultimately, after having experienced all kinds of interrogation and the torture that that went on there, they were released. And they found them innocent, but it took a long time to make that.
Well, they were found innocent, but they weren't released for quite a while after they were found innocent, because who wants to take, first of all, Guantanamo prisoners, even though found to be completely innocent? Second of all, who wants to upset China? China wanted them back. And you want to know what China would do with them?
Oh, sure.
So the U.S. refused to release them to China, which caused a big stir there.
Right.
But which country wants to take them when China is saying, we don't want you to take them, we want them back?
Yeah.
Well, if they take them back, they're either going to be imprisoned and tortured or executed. There's no question. They're U.S. That's why the U.S. didn't give them back, because they were speaking out against China. They said, we're not terrorists, but we're just trying to make our life for ourselves, blah, blah, blah, all of that. And talking about how life was bad in China. So, yeah, they ended up getting dispersed throughout. But they were married and had children who were supposed to be coming to join them in Afghanistan or wherever. They were actually hoping to make it to Turkey, I believe.
Yeah, they were trying to move to Turkey. But unfortunately, they have been in Afghanistan and Pakistan in a wrong time, in wrong place in a wrong time.
Yeah. I think ultimately they ended up in Albania.
Four of them did. And then some went to Palau, some went to the Barbados. They were dispersed throughout.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Switzerland, yeah.
So ultimately, I suppose with determination and some work and some luck, they may be able to go someplace else that they want to be.
They'll never be with their family again.
But it's difficult,
And they were imprisoned for 9 years, yeah.
Yeah, to say that is unfair is an absolute understatement.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Yeah. So one thing I wanted to touch on, we haven't done it yet, John, sort of what your journey was like, what sort of got you thinking that you would like to be somewhere else, and so how you ended up coming to Canada.
In Canada, why the reason of coming to Canada? I finished my undergraduate and I was trying to do more research about my.
This was at home. You finished your undergraduate work.
I finished it and I was trying to do more research on my major or for further education on my major. And but Canada was really impressed me because of the Hopper.
Oh.
We better.
Yeah. I really love that guy.
Just a second. I just want to make sure this is clear here.
Yep.
you're a Harper fan.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So why, I got to ask the question then. Why are you a big fan of Stephen Harper?
In 2005 or 2004, as you might know, when I was in Canada, I was arrested by the Chinese government, Chinese, and he's in Chinese prison. And at that time, as a Prime Minister of Canada, Harper asked the China strongly to release that Canadian. But China said, don't talk about this. This will influence our economy. Yeah, it's the relation and economy. And
right.
The Chinese Harper said, you don't try to buy our human rights for your dollar. We wouldn't exchange our Canadians' human rights with your dollar. The Harper talked strongly, directly in public. And I was very impressed that a prime minister can talk about the human rights that strongly. And at the time, I was really excited and think, there are some people, there are some presidents in the world, in Western countries, they can talk publicly, strongly about human issue. And then I started searching about Canadian university. Yeah, and finally, I came to Canada.
So that was the start of your journey to Canada.
Yeah, that I started learning or knowing about Canada.
Right. So you were able to come then. You're not a refugee.
No, as an international student.
Right. So what was that like? Was it fairly straightforward getting your visa and all that sort of thing? Or did you have a lot of hoops to jump through? And
yeah, first I need to start from a kind of the passport. This we mentioned before, it was really difficult. And yes, I had a lot of trouble to getting it. I spent a lot for giving the government or guarantee me. I bribed, actually. I bribed it for giving the officials give money. But this is bad, but for coming.
Well, hey.
That's the only way ethnic minorities are getting their passport. And if you wonder how any ethnic minority is getting it, that's the only way.
Right.
So that's not an unusual story, though. It's not necessarily talked about openly.
Right. Yeah. So what point are you at in your studies now?
Engineering.
So you did your undergraduate work in your homeland.
Yeah.
And so you're working on what are you working on now? Is it just advanced in engineering, I suppose?
Yeah, masters.
Masters. So, okay. Yeah. Right. So ultimately, you're hoping to go back.
No, I think.
Or just for a visit,
For a visit, for sure I will go back. And if I want, if you ask me if I would like to work there, I say no, because it's really difficult to find a work there as a Uyghur there, especially. And I can tell you a story about me. After my undergraduate, I was trying to find a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to go back my homeland to work there. And there was a company, a resource company, who was trying to hire undergraduate students. And I called them, and I called them if they need engineering. They said, yeah, we need engineering. And they did come to our university for hiring more people. But the Chinese student did not want to go there because it's Western, not relatively poor than Beijing, Shanghai, although that's good company.
Mm-hmm.
And I missed that chance to give my resume to them. And later I called them if they need engineering. Sorry, missed the chance. And they said, for sure, if you are engineering, we really welcome you come to our company. You can send your resume to me. And I was very excited and sent my resume via email. But next 2 weeks, they did not reply it. I finally decided to call them, and they said, sorry, we don't need engineering. But later, I realized that the student did hire more Chinese people there. And later, I realized that that's because in my research resume, because of my name, they can recognize I'm Uyghur.
Ah, yes.
No, the Chinese, the difference, the name is totally different. They can recognize this.
Right.
And yeah, that's why the later they also hired more Chinese from my school. But and those universities had really bad marks. Even I think they couldn't graduate from a university. Very bad. They failed many classes, but they still hired them. Yeah, so I if I go back, I'm sure I couldn't find a job from there. So
right,
that was the problem.
You also had that other interview where you actually had an interview, and once they asked you straightforward whether or not you were Uyghur,
yeah,
and they said they couldn't accommodate you once you said yes.
So
that's pretty obvious. Didn't even finish the interview and pretend, and then say sorry. You weren't just right away. No. Might as well just hand it back the resume.
Yeah, that's
just like that.
In front of people. They can tell me later in email, I wouldn't be embarrassed that much. I just, they asked me where I'm from, and I said, from the Xinjiang, are you Chinese? No, I said, no, I'm Uyghur. And then they just did give me my resume directly, no. I was very embarrassed. Please, you can be a little bit polite. You can tell me what you want via email so that I will feel better. Yeah, so many people you gave me that. I was really embarrassed, you know.
Yeah, I mean, in most situations like that, they would say, well, we'll get back to you.
Right, yes, yes.
You know? And either they wouldn't get back to you,
right.
Yeah.
Or they would just send you a nice short email. Sorry, the position's been filled and you didn't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you are not qualified. Then it's fine.
Yeah.
Don't give me line in front of people. Yeah. How that.
Yeah.
Terrible.
You know, on the other hand, though, I mean, it's kind of nice that they were straightforward.
Well, yeah, except for that they're violating,
maybe
right?
Nice is the wrong word there, but I mean...
Well, then you know what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
Then you can make your plans accordingly. Like he says, what are his options back in his homeland?
I'm just curious. You've done your university undergraduate work there. Are you encouraged from any quarters there to emigrate? I mean, if they're not going to give you a job in Xinjiang province or anywhere around where you live, if that's impossible, then what are you supposed to do? Are you encouraged to emigrate? I mean, are they worried?
Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah, to be the lost classic in the society and just struggle for that, just for food, then you don't need to think more. You don't need to think about what's a human right.
Yeah.
You just think about the bread every day. Yeah.
To say, I don't know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, if you're not even able to access a passport easily,
right,
then to say in any way encouraged to emigrate, no. And the other thing is, a lot of people who emigrate, they can now look on the internet. You found out so much when you came to Canada and could look at the open internet and find out what happened in Tiananmen Square.
Right.
What happened in all of these things? He's told me a lot about history with deals between Stalin and Mao, like all sorts of things that he found because when he came here. They don't want you coming here if you're going to show that you're like, no, I don't.
But just like we touched on earlier, the average citizen in People's Republic of China doesn't know this stuff.
No. You know? They can't know it. There's no,
because
there's
no
way to access it.
They're not taught it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way to access. Like, these things are blocked.
Yeah.
The internet isn't open. The books don't show these things. These books are not allowed.
Right.
So.
Yeah, in the first 2 weeks I came to Canada, actually I did not sleep that much, maybe five hours every day, but mostly I just spend all my time to read on internet.
Right.
I watched lots of video. It's so good that YouTube is so good.
Well, on that note, we're going to have to cut it off.
Oh, wow.
Our hour is done. So I would just like to thank you both for showing up and telling us about what Uyghurs are all about. And hopefully we'll have Mona back next week and healthy and that sort of thing. Thanks again. Every day and every moment in every corner of the world, injustice cries out for your intervention. No one individual can respond to all the problems of the world, of course. To paraphrase a great humanitarian, if you can't help everybody, just help one. And whether the abuses stop immediately or take a long time to end, the gift of your attention and intervention can make a profound and positive impact on the ability of individuals and communities to endure and prevail. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."